Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into this week's edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast, brought to you by Billy's Pecans. Chase Parm here with you to navigate through this. Russell Johnson, who's going to be giving you pretty much all the information today alongside me here in the Clark Ford Studio, a podcast brought to you by Billy's Pecans. You can head on over to billyspecans.com, see all the great delicacies and chocolates, pecans, and different things they have there, including coffee cakes, one of mine and Neil's favorites as well. If you got a small group, a big group, or even a corporate gift-giving situation, Billy's Pecans can help you out. Give them a call, 1-800-624-7404, or info at billyspecans.com. Again, no matter the size of the order, they will help you out there. And again, we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio, 662-257-1900 is the phone number, Highway 25 South there in Amory. Give Corey a call. Let him give you a quote. No hassle, just a quote. You take it or you leave it, and once you take it, at the very end of the deal, tell them about the podcast, $500 off with Clark Ford, your purchase there in Amory. So, Russell, hello. We're going to talk to Jake Thompson, who covers high schools for the Oxford Eagle, about high school football starting up in the state of Mississippi this weekend. Also go through a couple different things on our own, but it looks like that the season is here and things are definitely picking up pace.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. We survived the off season. And coming up tomorrow will actually be exactly 1 year since I started my trek down here to Oxford, which, you know, it's been a pretty eventful year, especially on the field. But, I mean, looking forward to another year. Yesterday you had Hattiesburg running back. We'll get right into this. Snoop Connor kind of got tired of waiting for the Ole Miss offer. I mean, he did receive an official offer from the Rebels, but they weren't ready to take his commitment. And what ended up happening was he got tired of waiting. When he was named a member of the Dandy Dozen last week, he had mentioned that he was down to Ole Miss and Memphis. And he basically kind of proceeded to commit to Memphis before the season. A lot of high school coaches, what they really like to do is for these kids to have their recruitments over or close to over before their season start, especially at Hattiesburg, where they're, as I talked to Jake about, you know, they're planning on competing for a state title.
So with Ole Miss and Snoop, is it a big deal, not a big deal? Is it something that can come back and haunt them? What do you kind of think about the kid as far as down the road? Is that one that there's the potential that Ole Miss could lose sleep over?
I don't really see them losing sleep over him, but at a position of need like that, where you still don't have any proven option at running back, sure, Scotty Phillips is impressing in scrimmages and looking good in practice, but until you see him on a Saturday afternoon against Alabama, against LSU, and against South Carolina this year, you're not going to know what you have. And with that, I would say that it's more of a sign of their confidence in the ability to end up flipping Lausanne running back Eric Gray than it is them not thinking highly enough of Snoop Connor.
So the Rivals 100 and 250 were updated this week. The 250 coming out 5 minutes ago, actually, as we record this, 11:06 a.m. on this Wednesday. Where are things shaping up as far as changes for the state of Mississippi in the Rivals 250?
Yeah, it looks like Jaron Ely made another climb up. He went up three spots. He's up to 108. You could very well see him in either the five-star discussion in terms of football. I mean, he's probably already a five-star.
Is he lower recruit simply because of his baseball situation and it's not a guarantee that he plays football at the next level?
Yes. Okay. I think that's kind of started to creep into to analysts' mind, especially, you know, kind of when they had a chance to invite him to the five-star challenge. They had a chance to invite him to Rivals camps, but instead he kind of chose to play baseball. You know, both him and Maurice Hampton both played in that. Was it the Perfect Game All-American this past week?
Yeah, they had the East Coast Pro and then the Perfect Game stuff.
Yeah. It seems like both Ely and Hampton's stock continue to rise. I've actually started to hear Hampton's name as somebody who might have a draft decision to make as well, kind of after, you know, everything clears out and the smoke goes out with everything going on at LSU. He's also going to have a decision to make in his recruitment. With Hampton right now, I don't see Ole Miss making the move as much as I see, what is it, Mississippi State and Miami kind of flirting around there, especially Miami. I would put Miami in second place right now. Then I would kind of put the MLB draft in third. And then Ole Miss would kind of be in the picture there if things don't go as planned, especially this season in football.
So what else you got on the 250?
So other things on the 250, you saw Dean fall a bit. He fell 8 spots in the Rivals 100, but his fall was more so because of other people gaining 5th stars than it was him doing anything wrong. Obviously, his film didn't change or anything like that. Alabama commit Byron Young went up 2 spots to 127. Jaron Handy's up to 129, committed to Auburn as of now. Mingo made his entrance into the Rivals 250 after a impressive 5-star challenge performance that you've heard from Chad Simmons on this podcast. You've heard from Nick Kruger on this podcast, and you've also seen on Twitter and social media and everywhere just how impressive Mingo was in the 5-star challenge. And actually, that was when he did make that decision to commit to Ole Miss. We were just able to kind of keep that under wraps and everything until he was ready to make it his decision. Mingo actually started out as a 3-star recruit, so seeing that climb up the rankings has been something to watch, especially at a high school such as Brandon, where you know you've got to be close to, or if not, one of the 6A favorites. Rounding out the rest of the 250, you've got linebacker target Daniel Humuli, who's likely going to end up at Washington with Mika Ayu from California. You've got him at the 152. I'm getting back into Mississippi. Pickering dropped 38 spots to 158. DeJuan Black kind of stayed the same at 156. There's no questioning or confusion about why his ranking is what it is. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him drop even further when we do the midseason rankings. Let's see if there's anybody else in the 250. Danis made another rise up into 170, went up 7 spots, flipping him from Mississippi State has been something that's been really noteworthy. I actually did a story today on rebelgrove.com, Flip Talk Part 2, which I talked about in the past. Well, Part 1 was about out-of-state schools landing commitments and signing kids from in-state. So Part 2 was about Ole Miss and flips in general, because flips are going to be a part of every class, especially at as high of a level as the SEC is, to where you can count on at least a few of the commitments they have currently flipping. So I kind of detailed those a little bit and went in depth with that. Getting back to the Rivals 250, though, Darius Thomas from Jonesboro, Arkansas, dropped 69 spots to 177. His thing more so is that, you know, he didn't camp anywhere. He wasn't seen anywhere this summer to where his performance could warrant being so close to the Rivals 100.
You mentioned N'Kobe Dean a second ago. We talk about him every single week on this show. I know that, even though I don't typically host. A lot of questions. You've got some finality on this. He had an Ole Miss visit recently, and even though the unofficial visitor thing's going on with the connections, it sounds like he can make as many as he like.
Yeah, that's definitely what it seems like, especially with his brother on the team and everything. There were eyebrows raised and questions asked about how he was able to be on campus during the dead period, and those questions were answered, number one, when he did that, and number two, when he's going to continue to take those visits basically as much as he wants to. In terms of having his brother on the team, there is several other different rules and loopholes that Ole Miss plans to use to their advantage in an effort to stay, I guess, to keep up with his recruitment.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like anything. I mean, you use what you have, and anytime there's that prior relationship, that connection, I mean, it's a lot like, you know, coaches' kids when they're being recruited. There's certain schools that have that ability to have that guy on campus as often as needed, and you know, it's just another positive. We always talk about checks and minuses and pluses. It's just another plus for the recruiting of a kid. It's not maybe a determining factor, but it can't hurt. At the end of the day, you want as few minuses and as many pluses as possible.
Especially at a position such as need as linebacker is at Ole Miss. Everybody talks about, you know, I've heard Neil talk on the Oxford Exxon podcast quite a bit about John Sumbrough and his enthusiasm and everything. And everybody asks, you know, who's the lead recruiter for Dean? Who is in charge of his recruitment? Because technically that's Maurice Harris's territory in recruiting. But I can tell you for a fact that he is not the primary recruiter for N'Kobe Dean and for anybody at Horn Lake for that matter. Now, coming into Jalen Jordan, the late Cormorant, you've got Harris on that one. Harris and Clark and Jones. But with Dean, it seems like it's more of a all hands on deck approach with Sumrall kind of leading the way, especially being that he is a linebacker. Now, getting back to the 250 and kind of rounding things out, Brandon Turnage dropped. Obviously, he missed his entire junior year, remains committed to Alabama. He dropped to 230 in the 250. And then something that caught my eye as I was kind of just going through it when you were talking a minute ago is Cormonte Hamilton, that Whitehaven tight end who's committed to Ohio State. He has climbed up from a three-star to a four-star in the 250, coming in at 244. Seeing him and everything that was taking place this offseason with him, he's developed quite a bit, and Ole Miss is still after him, especially with the need at tight end.
There's always about 35 stars at the end of the cycle. It's not a set number. It's how many ever deserve it. With four stars, it's everybody else in the 250 plus about 25 or 30. Is that right, typically?
Yeah, that's what they try to do. I mean, there are several 5.7s that remain in the state of Mississippi who very well could end up with their fourth star. But giving them that and then taking it away is a lot worse than giving it to them in the last cycle. That's something that's happened in the past with rivals, and that's something that they, I would think, try to avoid. Because you see 5.7s like Jerrion Jones, who's committed to Mississippi State, Jamon Gordon, Derek Hall, Demonte Russell. You see these guys, and you see the upside that they show, but you're not going to give them that four star just to take it away. I know we had Chad on here a few weeks ago, and he kind of broke down what's going to take place in terms of evaluating 5.7s and giving or not giving that four star. And we even talked about, you know, why N'Kobe Dean doesn't have a fifth star, which, you know, I actually had to go in because for some reason we had him listed as 6'1 or 6'2 on his Rivals profile. And I'm like, we can't do that. It's not because he's not that tall. And if he was that tall, he would have the fifth star.
Right.
And yeah.
So we'll get into actual high school football talk in a couple seconds. Again, Jake Thompson, Oxford Eagle, covering Oxford and Lafayette, but having a pretty good grasp of football, at least in this part of the state of Mississippi. Before we do that, I'll tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Lentz and Little PA. It is Central and South Mississippi's law firm. If you want to hire for business advice and commercial litigation, whether you're having trouble paying your debts or someone isn't paying you what they agreed to pay, Lentz & Little can quickly advise you of your best course of action. Lentz & Little has over 60 years of collective experience representing companies and individuals in defaulted loan workouts, collections, repossessions, and foreclosures. Representing banks as well as companies having financial difficulties, Lentz & Little offers creative solutions to financial problems. Attorneys at Lentz & Little have the versatility you need, regardless of whether you need help with general business advice, issues with payment or taxes, or representation in state court, federal court, or bankruptcy court. So if you're in need of advice or assistance with financial situations, call Jared Little at 228-867-6050 or visit the website at LentzLittle.com. Also tell you that even if you cut out the lattes and put those light bulbs in a brown bag, your lunch every single day, it still feels like payday keeps getting here a day or two late and a few hundred dollars short. Try this. Give State Farm agent Wally Morgan a call. Tell him you'd like a free discount double check. It's a line-by-line review of your car insurance policy to make sure you're getting the discount you deserve, like 10% for being a good driver, another 10% if you have a teenager that just happens to be a good student, and 17% for simply combining your car and home policies. Add all those State Farm discounts up, and it's pretty easy to see how you could be saving hundreds of dollars a year. So get started today by giving State Farm agent Wally Morgan in New Albany, Mississippi a call at 662-539-7062. That's 662-539-7062, because being there is about more than keeping your money in your pocket like it's always been. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Discounts vary state to state. So again, we'll go now to Jake Thompson of the Oxford Eagle on the Billy's Pecans hotline.
We've got Jake Thompson from the Oxford Eagle joining us on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so before we get started, you know, we got high school football season, what, just hours away now. What are you looking forward to the most so far?
You know, seeing if teams who maybe surprised some people last year, who they thought maybe they were still rebuilding, who made it deep in the playoffs, can continue that. And then some teams who kind of disappointed after good 2016s can see if they can find their footing and find their way back to Hattiesburg. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns and variables and just kind of a lot of, you know, unexpectedness so far.
Now, why is it that they're playing in Hattiesburg this year? Obviously, this is just my second year down here.
Well, forever in the day, they played at Memorial Stadium in Jackson, or Veterans Stadium, where Jackson State plays. It just always was there. They held it there, and then some behind-the-scenes stuff with MHSAA and Jackson State and, you know, all kind of drama forced them to kind of look out and find other avenues. And, you know, Alabama's always done it to where the state championships are held at the college that isn't hosting Iron Bowl. So they kind of looked at that formula and approached Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And of course, they were like, of course, great. You know, we'd love to do this. So that for 4 years, they alternated to Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And then on top of that, they kind of threw Southern Miss a bone and said, well, you can alternate with Montgomery hosting the Mississippi-Alabama All-Star Game, or because it's never been in Mississippi. It's always been in Montgomery for as long as I can remember. And so they did that, and then Southern Miss was kind of, you know, wanting to have a little bit bigger pot. They would like to have all 12 of these teams come to Hattiesburg. And the, you know, coaches south of I-20 were also like, hey, we'd like to not always have to drive so far. So, you know, after listening to all that, they approached Southern, and I believe for the next 2 years, it'll be down at Southern, and they'll probably reevaluate and see how they want to add all three into a rotation of sorts.
That's I guess that's interesting. we'll kind of start at 6A and then kind of make our way down. Obviously, you know, being in Oxford, Oxford's got a really talented 2020 recruit in JJ Pegues and then his brother DD Pegues. But other than that, it really seems like there are some real questions coming into the season.
Yeah, you know, I watched him for about a quarter and a half after watching Lafayette's Jamboree on Friday night, and their offense just was kind of how it was last year. They couldn't really ever get anything going, and much like their games last year, they'd be good for a drive or two each half where they would find the end zone and get close, and that's kind of what happened Friday night against Charleston. It was their last drive with like a minute to go. John Marr, the quarterback, found DD Pegues for like a 51-yard pass to get down to the two, and then his brother JJ punched it in, and that was the lone score of a 7-0 game. Now, on the flip side, Oxford's defense looks to be as solid, at least for two quarters of the Jamboree, as they were last year. Last year they averaged holding opponents to under 12 points per game, and it looks like even though they lost a lot of key pieces with Quentin Wilfon at linebacker graduating, but that they may be able to find their footing and use some of these early non-region games to get that defense the way it has been. But offense is a huge question mark, in my opinion. It's just there's not much explosion there. There's not much outside of JJ, and if Didi can kind of do what he did for that one play, you don't have many other weapons for Oxford. It's not like the teams from, you know, a handful of years ago where they made it to the state title game 3 years in a row with the DK Metcalfs and Zach Kauser as tight end and other players such as that, and Jack Abraham, who's now at Southern at quarterback. It's just kind of been a down cycle for Oxford offense, and you know, it'd be interesting to see if they can kind of find their footing, and they got a tough one right off the bat Friday.
Now, where all did JJ Pegues line up in that scrimmage last week?
They had him as a receiver. They had him mostly as kind of a strong tight end, and then they used him for that one play I saw when they were inside the 10 as a wildcat quarterback, you know, kind of a jumbo package to punch the ball in. But they want to keep him kind of a tight end. That's what JG likes to play. He told me he kind of models himself like a Jimmy Graham or a Greg Olsen, kind of a strong, big body tight end. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Chris Cutcliffe gets creative with him all throughout the season, and defenses kind of see him play almost every position outside of offensive line.
Yeah, I could see that as well. Now moving up to North Mississippi a little bit further into Horn Lake. I mean, Horn Lake's got, I think, four or five kids with SEC offers. This seems to be the year for Brad Boyette, where he's going to have to make noise in the state playoffs, or he's going to have to make noise in the unemployment lines. What do you think going into the season with them?
There's no reason that Horn Lake shouldn't be able to do what they did last year. I mean, they lose one receiver. Now, it was Boykins, who had 330 yards, but they still have Jack Brown, their tight end. He wasn't used much, and he is still kind of down the list of a lot of receivers because they have a ton of their receiving core coming back. But they've got their quarterback, Ray Jones, who just needs to – Radar Jones, I think, as you call him. He needs to keep doing what he did last year, you know, really good all in the air. And, you know, Horn Lake made a deep run in the playoffs. They, in terms of region standings, they improved by a game. They were 4-3 in 2016 and finished second behind Tupelo at 5-2. And, you know, yeah, they kind of ran into a buzzsaw at Starkville in the quarterfinals. But, you know, I don't see where Horn Lake can't take that next step. And as you said, they really have no excuse not to, and you know, in terms of the head coach keeping his job.
Yeah, I mean, the pressure's on, and I mean, the pressure's gotten on so much there that, sadly, Radar's only going to be playing offense this year, which, I mean, he's being recruited by almost every school that's recruiting him. either as an athlete or as a cornerback, because of his speed and his size, like being 6'2 and close to 200 pounds, that it's kind of sad to see that he's only going to play quarterback this year. But Boyette and the offense just can't afford for him to get hurt, is what it seems like. Not any other schools up there in North Mississippi that kind of stand out to you as somebody who might surprise in 6A?
In 6A, in terms of surprising, at least in the region that I cover the most with you know, the Tupelos and Oxfords and South Havens, you know, South Panola, I thought maybe they would take another step back to where the prowess that they used to be. But their offense was kind of like Oxford's against when they played Lafayette in their Jamboree. They just could not – it wasn't – they busted a few seam plays, but overall there was not much that South Panola was doing. But they did finish second, tied with Horn Lake. I would like to see them kind of be that surprise team, or, you know, get back up there fighting in the playoffs, being what they've always used to be. I mean, they were South Panola University for a reason. And maybe South Haven, they were kind of a 500 team. They finished sub-500 last year, but maybe they can surprise some people. But the biggest surprise, I think, even, you know, carrying over from last year to me, was what Tupelo did. You know, they finished 7-0, undefeated in their region, 11-1 overall. Now, they didn't have a great postseason because they faced Warren Central and got beat pretty handily in the first round. But last year was supposed to be their kind of rebuilding year. Like, that was the year where these players who kind of became superstars were supposed to just kind of find their way. And 2018 was going to be Tupelo's year. But Tupelo kind of made last year their year, at least in the region of North Mississippi. And, you know, I would like to see them take a step further and kind of make a run with the Start Bowls and the Warren Centrals deep in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Tupelo's returned a few players. You know, you got Jordan Jernigan, you've got J-Rock Williams, you've got Stephon McLaughlin, the big body quarterback who they use. And then on the defense, but the thing they've got to replace is they got to replace Jet, they got to replace Peter Gray, and then Tavario Standifer, who's been committed to Ole Miss for quite some time. You know, at losing him to an Achilles injury as early as they did, they've had ample time, I would think. I mean, you're never fully going to replace his production, but you've got the chance to duplicate it with a multiple people. Tupelo's offense is what's going to be interesting. I know watching them in 7-on-7 and in the offseason going to their spring practices and stuff, it seemed like they were trying to add some new wrinkles to the offense. And, you know, starting out week one at Meridian is going to be quite the test for that team, and especially that offense, especially with Meridian's defense. You know, now going a little further south in 6A, you know, Brandon seems to be loaded.
That's kind of my alma mater. So of the South teams, I kind of keep up with that one the most times. And we all know what Mingo can do as a receiver, 775 yards last year, 6 touchdowns, recently committed over to Ole Miss. And along with Jay Stanley, who's one of Brandon's defensive backs, also coming up to Oxford next year. He's an athletic defensive back. Stanley is. He's got closing speed, physical. You know, their defense is going to be really, really good with him and I believe Shoto. And Brandon made a nice run last year. Kind of, they've had an up and down in between last year and some years before. But, you know, I expect to see them represent the South. They lost by 3 to Hancock last year, who then ran into Pearl, who, you know, everybody had trouble with Pearl. But I see Brandon, you know, being one of those teams in the South that they can give Pearl a run for their money. And I would expect that game at the end of the year between Brandon and Pearl to be, you know, in my opinion, maybe a precursor to the South State if the brackets fall the right way, and if not for more than a region title.
You see Brandon, you see Pearl making the playoffs this year?
You know, I know that's kind of a bold statement, and we'll get into some other bold statements I've made, but, you know, Pearl's losing a ton, but I just feel Perry is proven to be a good coach, and he knows how to make what he has work. It'll be a more of a struggle for Pearl this year than it was last year, but yeah, I see him making the playoffs. Maybe not more than a first round or maybe a surprise quarterfinal, but I do see the Pirates back in there.
I'll let you stand on that hill because I am not going on that one. I mean, Pearl lost so much, you know, losing Tylan Knight, losing J-Red Patterson, and losing other members of that team. It's going to be hard for them to duplicate the results they had last year, especially, you know, making it all the way and winning the state title.
You're right. And kind of another team in the South, and you mentioned them a minute ago, it is Meridian. I like to see what they do. I mean, that Tupelo-Meridian game, in my opinion, and for 6A anyway, is probably the most intriguing matchup in week one, because it's kind of a proving game for both in terms of what is Tupelo going to kind of get the edge on that and keep doing what they were doing offensively and defensively last year, or is Meridian going to kind of make that step up and prove that maybe they're going to take the mantle in the South from Pearl and be that team that's tough to deal with.
Yeah. I can agree with you on that with Meridian. With Meridian, it's interesting. I'm going to be interested to see if they put their 2019 athlete who is starving for an Auburn offer with, you know, his other teammate Jamon Gordon committed there. That'd be T. Adams. See if they put him anywhere else on the field other than quarterback. You know, seeing him at running back might do something. Seeing him at receiver. You know, Meridian's defense has been vaunted as the state's best. But when you see Starkville, I mean, we haven't even talked about Starkville. And Starkville's likely, in my opinion, the 6A favorite coming out of the South.
Yeah, and I feel they may be your 6A champ overall. With, you know, they lost by 4 to Pearl, and that was an exciting game last year up at Ole Miss in December. And they don't lose much at all, and they're going to be dominant again. Looks like most Starkville teams usually are. And I get to see them second week against Oxford, which that may not be much fun of a game for Oxford. You know, in week two after they have to come off a game against Warren Central. But I'm looking forward to seeing Starkville in person and all these players. They got Edwards, Altmyer, Rufus Harvey, and all those guys to see if they have, you know, kind of overcome that loss last year and they're ready to just kind of forget it and now be the kings of 6A.
Yeah, they've got a big test on Friday night against Noxubee just to start off the season. And, you know, Noxubee is, mm-hmm. you know, one of the favorites year in and year out, it seems, in their qualification. Or classification.
You know, it's always seems to be Noxubee, and then who else is going to kind of make that step up in 4A? And you know, I feel like in the North, it's going to be a North team that wins the title this year, and you know, it may be between Noxubee and Louisville, but because in 4A, all they've got, you know, the teams that were in the North half or South half final last year, Poplarville, who made it to the 4A state title in 16, lost to Lafayette, returns most of their offense. I mean, most of all, and a lot of their defense too. They lose some key leading tacklers and stuff, graduation, but Poplarville kind of stays right there. And East Central, they lost Tony Brown, and you know, that's about all you got to say in terms of East Central maybe having another special season, making it to the title game like they did last year. But I feel like in the South, it'll just be Poplarville, but it'll be between Noxubee and Louisville, and whoever is kind of comes out between those two is probably going to take it all come December.
Yeah, I would say that's basically the, you know, a de facto state championship game when they meet in the semifinals. But we kind of skipped 5A and your other bold prediction you made on Twitter, which seems to be somebody's header on their Twitter.
Yeah, I've never been one for anybody to kind of care about my opinions on Twitter, and so I'm not used to that. But I made the bold hot take of the summer, it seems, in Mississippi that West Point, the two-time defending 5A champs, will not make the playoffs. And you know, I had good reason for that. I was just throwing out a hot take, but I didn't realize it would kind of take off as much as it did. But they lost a lot on offense. They lose their starting quarterback. They lost their top four rushers and their top four receivers, and especially Brownlee and White, who carried most of the workload. I mean, their offense has just kind of been depleted. I just don't see them being that juggernaut that they've been. Now, they get Columbus in, you know, Thursday night in week one, but after that, they've got a tough non-conference slate that will include like a Louisville and some other schools like that in North Mississippi, where we'll find out before region play if West Point is still the green wave that they've been, or if they're going to be more like I predicted them to be.
Where what do you predict them at record wise this year?
You know, I still think, I mean, the region isn't that tough of a region for them. So, I mean, I feel like they can make the playoffs if they just kind of play even 500 football. But, you know, you've got Olive Branch, who made a good push last year. They finished just behind him at 6-1. Grenada is kind of at, I'm not really sure about team. They usually are good, but are they going to be better than mediocre? Lake Cormorant finished 6-7. I mean, it feels like it could be a battle between those four. And now you've got Lafayette, who looks like a whole different team. They look like that 2016 state title team with everybody healthy and that offense just churning the way it did for two quarters against South Panola. You know, I feel like it's a five-team race for those four spots, and if West Point, you know, trips up anywhere, especially once region play gets going in September, it may be one of those where one game is all the difference it makes, and, you know, they could see themselves on the outside looking in. But I feel like there maybe will be that two to three seed, maybe four seed if they survive and don't slip out any more than one or two games throughout the year. But I feel like it is a five-team race in Region 1 5A.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be interesting. And, you know, talking about Lafayette, you know, they finally got all of those Oxford transfers healthy, including their running back, who I think is going to be kind of breakout this year, Lance Stewart. They've got Brandon Turnage, who's finally healthy. Eric Jeffries is finally healthy and on the field. And, you know, you've also got others like Quinshon Twilley, who's coming back from a season-ending injury. And then the quarterback play, I think, is what's going to be either their kryptonite or their strength as the season progresses at Lafayette.
Yeah, offense looked amazing with Randy Anderson kind of coming and taking that quarterback spot. It was kind of thrusted upon him quicker than I think Coach Michael Fair and then and his staff wanted it to be, with injuries right off the bat at Cleveland Central with Brandon Turnage being out for the year. But Randy Anderson looked amazing at quarterback and as kind of that dual threat weapon. And Brandon Turnage mostly played defense, but he did make a couple appearances on offense last Friday, and one of them was for a 25-yard touchdown where he just kind of was better than the South Tunnel defender and just hauled in a touchdown. And you talk about Lance Stewart, one of the Oxford transfers who had to sit out last year. He had an amazing 66-yard, that was the player I was thinking of earlier, 66-yard burst where he was almost tackled for about a 5-yard loss, did kind of a spin move and just swirled around all of South Tunnel's defense and found a gap and just, I think I said speed burst on Twitter. He just kind of went to another gear. And if they can get that out of him, on top of what Randy Anderson was able to do with his legs at times, Lafayette will once again have a good running back kind of duo, which, you know, the Commodores have always been known for their running backs, and they've been known for a decent defense. And with Eric Jeffries out there, he was impressive to see. I mean, that was his first two quarters of varsity football that he's ever played in his high school career due to injuries and then transferring from Oxford and sitting out. And he was swarming the football. He picked the first sophomore football he was right on top of. I mean, if they can put that together for four full quarters, I mean, this Lafayette team is not going to be the team that started out 0-5 last year.
Yeah, I can agree with that, especially, you know, I don't know how strong or weak Cleveland Central is going to be, but with the healthiness and the, you know, returning starters and everything with Lafayette, especially that offensive line, I think that offensive line is something that doesn't really get talked about as much, but they've got some 2020 kids who very could well end up on Ole Miss's radar as time goes on. Now getting to South 5A, we're not going to keep you too much longer. Hattiesburg, do you see them playing in their home city in the state championship game?
Yeah, I feel like we're going to get a hometown champion, and it is going to be Hattiesburg. They made it to the South State, or actually made it all the way to, I'm sorry, the state championship game where they just kind of ran into West Point, but they return. They've turned their starting quarterback into rusher and Connor. He was both. They're more of a ground game offense. They did lose most of their receiving core, but that wasn't really heavily relied on by the Tigers offensively. And, you know, I feel like there's just not – in South 5A, there just isn't a team that jumps out as a threat. I don't know if what Wayne County may have. They used to be really dominant, but they've kind of hit a low cycle. But I just see Hattiesburg plowing through the South half and sitting there waiting for whoever kind of comes out of the North. And I think your North half representative will come out of the Region 1-5A with, you know, the West Point, Lake Lafayette kind of region. I think that's who's going to represent the North.
Yeah, I mean, with Hattiesburg, I mean, they were able to see, you know, Snoop Connor. He basically was replaced Fabian Franklin as the season went on. Like, Fabian barely played. The running back who signed with TCU and ended up at Kahoma due to grades, but what happened was Connor was the one getting those reps and basically setting records last year and really kind of caught the eye of everybody. And then when you add the transfers of 4-star Rivals 250 defensive end Jaron Handy and 3-star safety committed to Baylor and Hakeem Vance, I mean, when you're adding transfers basically like it's free agency, I mean, Hattiesburg's definitely, I would say, the team to beat in 5A. Based in North or South. I'd love to see Hattiesburg play Lafayette in December. I think that would be quite the matchup.
Yeah, I would be kind of just blown away and knocked off my chair if somebody other than Hattiesburg is sitting there at Southern Miss Stadium December waiting for the North team to arrive. I just feel like it's the Tigers' year.
Now, getting down into 4A, we already talked about Noxubee and Louisville. What about 3A? What do you think about 3A with North Panola and everybody and Jefferson Davis County?
You know, Jefferson Davis won it all last year. They kind of cooled off a really hot Yazoo County, who was really good in the North. I saw them play Water Valley in the second round and just dominated Water Valley, and then they continued that all the way to Oxford. But, you know, North Panola, this feels like this is their year. You know, they were kind of the surprise team out of that Region 2, 3A once Charleston left it due to reclassification and stuff. North Panola kind of took over that region with an undefeated region record and a third seed and one overall. I feel like this Jefferson leading that offense, it's going to be North Panola's in the north facing probably, like you said, Jefferson Davis. It'll be a return for them in the south. I don't see any other team in the north kind of giving North Panola a run for their money unless Yazoo County just kind of continues off of that 14-1 year they had a season ago.
Yeah, I mean, with North Panola and, you know, that emerging offense with KJ Jefferson, who, you know, is currently committed to Arkansas and still kind of hear from Ole Miss and some other schools. And then you've got receiver Tyler Shorter, who's got some lower level offers. And then you've just got a bunch of dudes, for lack of better words, you know, guys who can play. They'll likely end up at, you know, a Northwest or just a JUCO in general and get the chance to possibly contribute down the line at an FBS school. With North Panola, this is Diffie's big chance to either end up on a college staff or to get a job at basically a higher level high school, I guess you could call it, could say, with a successful season at North Panola. Now, to finish up here, 6A, we'll go Oxford and Lafayette. Well, Lafayette's 5A, but whatever. Lafayette or Oxford, who do you think has a better season?
I think Lafayette has a better season. I felt that before. I saw both of them for, you know, two quarters in live play, for lack of a better word. Just at this point, Lafayette just seems to be more ahead of schedule in terms of the beginning of a season. You know, Oxford's offense is just worries me. And they've got, you know, they have 8 postseason teams from a year ago on their schedule. And that's just a tough ask. I know I kind of had them at around a 500 record, Oxford, that is. I know you've been a little more bearish on it. I was kind of more bullish. But, you know, I thought maybe they could squeak into that four spot in the playoffs. But, I, you know, seeing what I saw Friday, and then I'll see it again for four quarters against a really good Warren Central team. If they don't do a little bit more offensively, it may be a long year for them. But if Lafayette stays healthy, which was their big problem last year, the injury bug just stayed in their locker room, I feel like they're going to have a really good year, maybe only – 1 or 2 losses when it's all said and done, maybe 3, but I feel like they're going to have a really solid year and be deep into that playoff run.
So are you predicting that Oxford beats Warren Central on Friday?
You know, I think you and me talked about this last week and I felt good about it, but now after that Friday night preview, I feel like it may be a long night for the Chargers at the red carpet bowl in Vicksburg.
Yeah. I think they end up losing that one by 10 points or more. You know, but my thing with Oxford is just trying to figure out, you know, where they just get their feet wet in 6A. I mean, they've gotten their feet wet in the past years being in 6A, but kind of figuring out where they fit and what does well, what doesn't do well in 6A. I mean, especially, you know, losing, like you said, the leadership of Quentin Wilfong and everything. There are several holes to fill for the Chargers.
Yeah, it was more growing pains for them last year than I anticipated it being. And, I just feel like they may still have a few more of those growing pains before they may, like you say, find their footing or get just another good crop of kids coming into their program, you know, in the next couple of years.
Yeah, they got stung bad by those transfers. I wasn't in town. I hadn't moved to Mississippi yet when those kids transferred from Oxford to Lafayette. So I have no idea about the logistics behind it. But they got bit hard by that, by whatever it was that led those kids to transfer, because they would be making quite the impact, and they would have made quite the impact last year on that 6A team.
Yeah, it was one of those that just kind of happened overnight. It even flew under my radar at first until I kind of heard about it and saw rosters as the summer went on. But, you know, it was probably the worst thing that could have happened for Oxford, because, as you said, it killed their depth for last year and this season. And it's going to be tough for them to see Lance Stewart and Eric Jeffries across the field from them in a few weeks when they play in that Crosstown Classic, and seeing what they're doing for the Commodores.
Do you expect Lafayette to win that game?
As of right now, I do. And even if Oxford improves a little bit more, I still think Lafayette at this point is the better of the two teams.
Yeah, I definitely can agree with you. Hey, Jake, I really appreciate the time joining the Soft Verbal Podcast. We'll definitely have to get you on again soon.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Safe travels to Vicksburg.
Thanks, man. You too, wherever you're heading.
Thanks to Jake for giving us a ton of time today. The podcast is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond. As a preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world, Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no-obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of the property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, wait, I don't own a storage facility, I'm just enjoying the podcast and listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group has a buyer generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit thestorageacquisitiongroup.com for more. So out of everything Jake said, what stuck out the most as we close up here?
I would say his hot take on West Point. Seeing them not make the playoffs would be something that would be shocking to several of those who have kind of followed high school football throughout the years. And seeing his tweet every time I look at a certain kid on West Point's Twitter.
Oh, it's one of their team members.
Yeah, it's on his header. So every time you look at his profile.
I mean, he knows a lot more about it than me, but just knowing that program, you know, there's a difference in, hey, okay, they're not going to win the state title, but not making the playoffs requires, I mean, quite the precipitous fall.
Yeah, Meridian made the playoffs last year at 500, so I'm not exactly sure how the playoff picture works in Mississippi.
Four teams per division.
Really?
Yeah, four teams per division.
So, yeah, I mean, you've got teams that are 500 and maybe even under 500.
Yeah, you typically need – you potentially only need two district wins for them to make the playoffs.
That is insane. So, I mean, for him to say that they're not going to make the playoffs, that was really interesting. And as well as how not bullish he is on Oxford, but he seems to have some hope that they've got a chance against Warren Central. And I really just don't – I don't see that taking place.
What kind of measuring stick would Warren Central be for Oxford this weekend?
It's going to be a big one, and you're going to be able to see if that offense is what they looked like last week or if they've kind of added something else in practice. You could end up seeing it at Oxford. You could end up seeing Pegues everywhere on offense, defense, and special teams, which you know he kind of mentioned. But Pegues actually will run the ball from time to time. They're going to use him almost to the point to where if I were him, I would kind of make a commitment to a school early on just in case I get tired and maybe don't have the best senior season or late in my junior season because of all of the carries and the wear and tear you're putting on him.
Yeah, West Point would have to not finish in the top four of a division that is this. It is West Point, Lafayette, Center Hill, Lake Cormorant, Olive Branch, Grenada, Saltillo, and Lewisburg.
That would be shocking. Especially with Lewisburg and Center Hill,
Saltillo
in there. Those are three schools who, if they finish below them, someone's getting fired.
Getting fired.
Yeah.
Okay. They will be also battle tested. They open up with 6A Columbus, and then they play Louisville and Starkville and Noxubee County prior to district play for West Point. So
Noxubee County's got quite the schedule, you know, playing them and playing Starkville week one. I mean,
they've always done that. They've always tried to play up, and you know they played. Was it Katy or one of the top Texas teams a couple years ago in Jeffrey Simmons' final year as well at Noxubee County? So yeah, they've done that in the past a pretty good bit.
Who got paid more, Jeffrey Simmons or Katy High School to play that game?
Yeah, and we'll end the podcast there today. Appreciate Jake Thompson for his time and Russell Johnson as always. You can find his content at rebelgrove.com. Maybe even a day, still a couple hours to go on the Get Gear. I don't think they killed it yet.
No, they haven't ran out yet.
So the Get Gear 99, put that discount in at rebelgrove.com. When you sign up, the promo code Get Gear 99, GETGEAR99. You get $99 worth of gear from the Rivals Fan Shop for filling out an annual subscription or being a monthly subscriber and upgrading to an annual. A lot of stuff there, not just new Landshark gear, not just Ole Miss, but college, professional teams, NASCAR, and more there in the Fan Shop. So thanks to Russell, thanks to Jake, and we'll talk to you again next week.